This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, and got a new co-host joining us. You might have seen his name on the website the last few days, Zach Peerless. He's our beat guy now, beat writer for UVA basketball, and we're lucky to have him with us. And Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to talk some Hoos basketball.
So this is the first podcast we've had Zach on, so we got to go a little bit into the personal, just to say, who is this guy? All right. So he if you've read his columns the last few days, you know he fits in well with AFP. There's a lot of numbers, a lot of analysis, so you know that part. But Zach comes from one. He's much more qualified than me to be running Augusta Free Press. He actually has a journalism degree from Northwestern University, which means pretty soon I'm gonna be riding his coattails wherever he ends up. I'm gonna say, Zach, remember when you get there to take me with you. But Zach, you're a recent Northwestern grad. You've done some work. Well, you tell the story. Talk about your work, your college, how you got into journalism, and I know you had a fun internship. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So you pretty much covered it. I graduated from Northwestern last March, so March 2018. Before that, I guess I started actually with News Virginia when I was still in high school at Greensboro. I went to Northwestern and I covered their football and basketball teams. That was a lot of fun. Northwestern, actually during my junior year, actually went to their first ever NCAA tournament. So it was a little bit of an adjustment going from a team, going from watching a team like Virginia to going to watching a team like Northwestern, who is struggling again this year. But it was really cool to see history in the making up there. And then obviously the football team played pretty well. Also during my junior year, I had an internship at Sports Illustrated for a few months. And I spent the summer between my junior and senior year writing for Yahoo Sports, which is out in Los Angeles. And then I basically helped out with Yahoo Sports all throughout my senior year. Did some NFL writing, some fantasy football writing, some NCAA basketball writing. And then after I graduated, I had an internship with the Denver Broncos. So headed out to the Rocky Mountains, and that was a really fun experience. But, right now, I've probably watched UVA basketball pretty, I've been pretty dedicated to UVA basketball, watching them no matter where I've been, for the past, decade or so, I would say. And it's been a really good run. So I'm home now, and I think, I'd just love to share my thoughts and my work, and, especially on this podcast.
So I got to say to our listeners, I was talking with my wife yesterday. Zach and I had coffee. We were talking about some story ideas for the next few days, next couple of weeks coming up. And I said, here's how I know that Zach knows UVA basketball pretty well. And I didn't do this as a test, but I said, I mentioned something about a player from about 10 years ago or so named Jontel Evans. And he immediately went in and said, yeah, Jontel. And he was talking. If you know Jontel Evans, You're pretty good. You're whatever test I would have been thinking of giving you, Zach, you definitely pass. If you can not just remember Jontel Evans, but give me 5 minutes on him, that was a sign. So that you're a UVA nerd like the rest of us who listen to this podcast regularly.
I am certainly a UVA nerd, and I grew up in Williamsboro, and I was a DC sports fan growing up, and there wasn't a whole lot of joy for the D.C. teams until, I guess, last year with the Capitals. But Virginia basketball has always been, something that I can watch twice a week in the winter and, 90% of the time have a smile on my face when the game ends.
Yeah, it's been a nice several years in that respect. So, well, last night was among those 90% plus experiences where we get to enjoy, though. Okay, so Scott German texting me during games. He always texts me during games. This is now where the podcast starts sounding like Tony Kornheiser talking about Michael Wilbon and him texting each other during games. But Scott texts me after the game. During the game, of course, I'm texting him saying, we're going to lose this game. I didn't change that when the lead got to 14. And after the game, he writes me back and says, I effing hate basketball, except he spelled it all out. And that's after a win. that's where UVA fans are now. You beat number 23 on the road playing a D-plus game at best, and you hate yourself and can't go to bed until 2 in the morning. But so your game column after last night, Zach, you noted all the bad stuff. I think mine was direct. I just said UVA played like crap. You spelled out how UVA played like crap. 16 turnovers, 22 fouls. I mean, all the numbers. How did Virginia win this game?
That's a really good question, because when you think of UVA basketball more than anything else, you think probably defense first. That's what anybody who doesn't watch a ton of Virginia thinks about. And then when you think about UVA's offense, you think of long possessions and eventually working it around to get a good shot. There's not, you know, one guy that you point to. Maybe if you follow them a little bit more closely, you think about DeAndre Hunter, but generally think of a team that moves the ball around, shares the ball for most of the 30 seconds of the shot clock. And last night, Virginia did not do that. You mentioned the turnovers. How did they win? I think one thing that you have to always look back on is UVA's calling card, which I mentioned in that column, which is they defend the three-point arc extremely well, better than almost any team in the nation. They do a terrific job making things chunky for opponents, and they did that again last night. You know, you look at all the things that went wrong, Virginia still did not, they did not lose any effort when everything else was going bad. They continued to play extremely well on the perimeter. NC State shot 7 for 26 from 3, which is way below their average. They're a very good three-point shooting team. So I think when you look at that, the defense was still there, even when it wasn't perfect or up to the standard that Tony Bennett has created. But offensively, they made enough plays. They got to the free throw line enough. DeAndre Hunter was able to make enough plays towards the basket. Kyle Guy had a big three. Jay Huff gave them some good minutes. So Tony mentioned, you know, it was a combination of they stuck in there and grounded out when things weren't going great, and then an occasional big play or two from a lot of different guys. Ty Jerome didn't play his best game. He hit a couple of threes. They only hit 4 threes in the game, and Ty Jerome, who did not have his best game by any standard, had 2 of them. So, you know, the little moments here and there, UVA would hit a big shot, or, you know, they would get a big second chance. They would get to the foul line. All those little things that, you know, the measure of a good team is winning when you don't play your best, and Virginia certainly didn't play its best and was able to win.
This is a game that last year's team would have lost, and last year's team was 31-2 in a regular season, lost the NCAA tournament game, but even last year's team would not have won this one, I think. And I even made a point in one of my post-game columns about, you're on the road, you're playing a top 25 team. Recently, we've seen Michigan State lay an egg on the road at Purdue, a good team in the Big Ten, but not a ranked team, and Michigan State played poorly. They were down 18 at halftime, lost by 10. It wasn't that close. We've seen North Carolina both blow out Gonzaga, but then get blown out by Michigan and Louisville. I mean, it's in the course of a 5-month season from November until March, you're going to have nights where you don't play well, where, you know, your shots aren't falling. Or last night, Tony Bennett hinted after the game in his postgame presser that Ty Jerome has a sore back, and he wasn't making an excuse, but that explains to me better than what I thought. To me, I was wondering if Ty and Kyle were just a little tired. They didn't look the same physically, and they were affected by ball pressure, which UVA guards are very rarely affected by ball pressure, and I don't know that State has the reputation of being a great ball pressure defensive team, and last night they looked pretty good, And so maybe Ty not being 100% physically could explain some of that. But you're going to have those nights. You're going to have nights where, you know, maybe you have a back spasm in your point guard. And you can't, you know, Ty was backing guys in 40 feet from the basket. That's just not what Ty does. And you're going to have that. You're going to have foul trouble. You know, both DeAndre Hunter and Jack Salt fouling out last night and having limited minutes as a result. And but to go on the road and win – yeah, if you're going to win an NCAA championship, you have to win 6 games. And you're not going to play your A game 6 times. You're going to play a C game. You're going to play a D game. And you're going to need to have that defense that UVA has, you know, when the offense isn't one of the most efficient in the country. And that's, to me, last night, as ugly as that was, I think that was actually the sign that this UVA team is ready for March, that they can win with not their A game.
Yeah, you bring up a couple really good points. The first one is, this is a long season. These are college basketball players who have responsibilities outside of basketball. It's not like the pros where you can practice all day, and if you're struggling, you can spend extra hours in the gym or in the weight room or wherever you need to be. You know, these guys are more prone to having inconsistent play, and one of the things that Virginia fans are spoiled by is that Virginia's been exceptionally consistent. You know, last night when I was waiting for Tony Bennett's press conference to come in, the way that I unwind from watching basketball is by watching more basketball. And I had Kansas and Texas up, and I was watching the end of that game. And I realized that Texas isn't a great team this year. Kansas is about as consistent as you get in terms of regular season play. And Kansas struggled last night and lost. And I'm sitting here thinking, Virginia struggled and won. And I appreciated that. You know, even when they don't play great, there are plenty of things to take away that were not good from last night. They were able to grind out a win. And college basketball, the margin of error in all sports, but especially in college basketball, when it's a little bit of a shorter game than the pros, the margin of error is so thin. When Virginia, dipped into that margin of error with those turnovers and those fouls, they probably didn't think that it was going to be a win or an easy win, and still they managed to pull it out. And you mentioned Ty Jerome's back. I think that's probably something that's worth at least talking about a little bit more. Virginia's played a lot of basketball over the past few weeks. Ty Jerome wants a ton of minutes. He has the ball in his hands a ton. And then, you're asking him after a pretty quick turnaround to go down. The Notre Dame game, there were some travel issues, and it's a pretty quick turnaround. Then he goes down and has to play 94 feet of offense with North Carolina State extending so much. So I think that's definitely something that he's got 4 days to recover ahead of Miami, and then I think that week off will do this team a world of good.
Yeah, the LaFonso Ellis, the commentator for ESPN last night, noted that as well, that this is a team that looks like it really needs that break. And for us fans, it'll be a tough week with a week in between Miami and Duke. But, boy, that team looks like they can use it. And that's a great point, too, Zach, that, we as fans just assume, maybe like their video game automatons. They're ready to play, and they're going to go play, and they're going to play the same they always do. And, yeah, they're kids. They're college kids, and they've got classes. They've got travel. There were travel issues getting in and out of South Bend for the game on Saturday, and a relatively quick turnaround, another road game at NC State. That's a tough place to play. I've covered games there before. It's a big arena. It's got different sight lines than you're used to maybe in some other arenas. Scott German noted last night too, and that kind of reminded me, when we've covered NCAA tournament games there, that floor is on top of hockey floor. It's where the Carolina Hurricanes play, and it's chilly in that arena. And last night was not a sellout, and I've been in these multi-purpose arenas when, with hockey under the hockey ice under the floor, and when it's not a sellout, and it's hard to believe it wasn't a sellout. You got number 3 in town versus number 23, but it wasn't a sellout. And it can be really cold in those type arenas. So you have all those factors going on, and NC State really needs that win. You look at State's schedule, they got a tough schedule coming up. Virginia Tech and Carolina, sort of a breather, maybe a trap game with Pitt, then Syracuse and Duke. Last night they could have gotten their fifth win in the ACC, and instead they're 4-4 now with that 5 games coming up. You knew you were going to get your best shot. So there's a lot of factors aligned against you, and then you're not even playing great. So yeah, it's interesting to see, just how that goes as far as UVA being able to pull out that win. And, yeah, had I lost you, Zach?
Yeah, I think the call just dropped.
Okay, well, now we're back, and I kept talking. So, actually, and I was actually at a concluding point to say, yeah, great win for UVA with all those factors aligned against them. Now let's switch gears. I want to talk to Zach's column today. It's hot off the presses, almost literally. Well, of course, not literally because we're talking about the internet. But just in the last hour or so, Zach taking a look at the big men that Tony Bennett has that he can display. And, you know, we did not clickbait you here, listeners and readers, I'm sure, too. We didn't put Jay Huff's name in the headline, but we're examining, you know, what UVA does, what Tony Bennett does in terms of his big guys up in the front court. And it was interesting, Zach. You had some interesting observations. I'm going to let you tell the story, but what we're doing here is examining how Tony uses those big guys. And it was even more stark, I guess, the numbers you found, Zach, than I had even realized in terms of just how much Virginia goes essentially four guards.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, people always talk about how this is kind of the age of the advanced stats and how much more efficient three-pointers are than two-pointers. And if you can make threes, even at a significantly lower clip than you make twos, then you can still be competitive in games. You know, you don't see a whole lot of two big man lineups anymore. Even though Virginia, as I know, rolls out a two big lineup to start every game with Jack Salton, Mamadou Diakite, they don't play that lineup that much. I noted about 20% of the minutes are played by both Jack Salton and Mamadou Diakite, and then the 80 other minutes are usually some combination of Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, Braxton Key, or Kihei Clark, kind of at those positions, at the 1-4 position. And then you have your one big man, and sometimes that's Salt, and you look at a little bit of a bigger lineup. Sometimes that's Diakite, and you're looking more at an athletic lineup, and sometimes that's Jay Huff, and you have a little bit more of an athletic five, and, or not athletic, but a really skilled and athletic guy at the five. So there's some flexibility there, and when you think about it, you know, I look back and think about Braxton Key being eligible this season was such a huge thing for them. If UVA didn't have him, they'd have a really short bench and maybe have to go with some more two big lineups. But essentially, UVA, to match opponents, plays somewhat positionless basketball. Yes, you have those two guards, but, you know, DeAndre Hunter can be your number four, Braxton Key can be your number four. There have even been times where they've gone really small and gone with Braxton Key and DeAndre Hunter as their four and their five. So, and it's tough because then when you look at what Virginia has, they essentially have three big guys competing for what is 80% of the time one big man spot. So I kind of looked into that and looked at all the stats that they provide. The thing to remember about big men in Tony Bennett's system is it's usually not the stats that determines how effective they are. You know, when you think about their defense and the hedging big men, they have to be able to get out to the perimeter. That's something that Jack Salt has done well throughout his career. Diakite has certainly improved in that area. Jay Huff is probably a little bit behind there. But then when you consider the other end, Jay Huff is probably the most advanced offensively. So it's a tough trade-off, and it's not one that's just as straightforward as we're going to stick Huff in here because we need offense, or we're going to stick Diakite in here because we want to be a little bit more athletic 1-5, or we're going to stick Salt in here because we want to be a little bit more physical. It really depends on the game flow, the opponent. And you'll see, you know, Diakite, for example, when they were at Notre Dame, Tony Bennett was like, we can't stop John Mooney, the big man from Notre Dame, because he's a great shooter. And he's a big guy, and Jack Salt's not going to stray too far from the basket. So they really leaned on Diakite there. Then you look kind of at last night's game, and NC State, you know, was making things really tough on Virginia just from an entry pass standpoint. Everything on offense was kind of a slugfest. And he inserted Jay Huff in there for all 5 minutes of overtime, and Jay Huff, the very first possession, catches a lob and finishes through the foul. And then you look at some earlier games from the year. The one that I mentioned was the Maryland game. Bruno Fernando is a guy who can really fill it up, but doesn't navigate too far from the basket. So that's a scenario where Jack Salt's going to get the minutes. But in general, it's really tough. This is a tough thing for Tony Bennett to deal with because, you know, what happens if Bruno Fernando hits a couple face-up jumpers? Or what happens when, I mentioned the Duke game, you have a team with a guy like Zion Williamson who's 285 pounds and barreling down the lane. So it's a tough thing for him. And the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway I had is that it's a learning process. This is the end of January. We're still months away from the postseason. It's a learning process, not only for the players, but for Bennett and his coaching staff. They're going to continue to tinker with the lineup, see where guys thrive, where guys play their best. That's what makes Bennett such a good coach. I never feel like there's a game where his players are out of position or not put in a position to play their best ball. There have been plenty of times this year where it's been a Diakite game. There have been plenty of times this year where it's been a Jack Salt game. And there have been more times as we've gotten into ACC play where it's been a Jay Huff game. And I think he's still learning how to balance that, and his players are still learning when they're going to be used.
Yeah, you know, the offense looks different when Huff's out there. He's used differently. He's usually setting screens right at the top of the key where you don't really see Diakite. Sometimes you see Salt out there, but he's not a weapon at the top of the key. He's more of an outlet for a pass and a dribble handoff. But you see Huff there, and you actually see the guards will run screens off him coming down from, like, in the post area where normally they run baseline to baseline. And then try to, you know, curl off screens, you know, sort of extended out from the lane. But with Huff, he's a weapon there because once he sets that screen, then if the defenders kind of focus on, say, it's Kyle Guy running off the screen, then Huff's there open for either a potential three-point jumper, which he can make. He's, I think, 7 of 12 this season from three-point range. Or he can certainly drive. We've seen a couple of one dribble from the three-point line, jump from the foul line, dunks from him in the last couple of weeks. And he's there for the high-low pass, too, to maybe if there is another big or if Braxton Key's backdoor cutting. But what is interesting about that is now I guess Salt is effective around the rim. And you note this, too. Salt doesn't shoot a lot of shots, but he is adept. I mean, you know, 4 or 5 feet in, but he can really seal his guy and finish things off around the rim. So he is a weapon there, and he also sets those great screens. Diakite can shoot the three-point jumper, as we've seen. He's got a really nice step back in the post, kind of face-up jumper, and can get around his guy if the defender kind of comes out to take that shot away. So more versatility there for him from maybe 15 feet in. So they all do have things they can offer offensively. Very different things they can offer offensively, but they do have, you know, we talk a lot about the defensive end with the Virginia Bigs, but they do offer some things offensively as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I put in a bunch of stats here, and you kind of see Diakite is actually playing the most minutes of those three in ACC play. He's up just over 50%, and some just behind him at about 49%. But you definitely do see, as you mentioned, how the offense changes. Jay Huff, first off, he has the best offensive rating, which is essentially, he shot the ball every possession, how many points you would score per shot or per possession. Obviously, free throws are factored in there as well. But you also see Jay Huff, when he's on the floor, he takes the most shots out of those three big men. And then you mentioned the defensive end. J-Huff actually has the highest rebounding percentage, so he's at 19% on defensive rebounds. So 1 of every 5 available misses he's grabbing. And then you sit there and you say, wow, it seems like Huff blocks the ball well. He has the best block percentage. Seems like he's shooting the ball well. He can do a lot more offensively. Why is he not playing more? And then you look at the foul numbers. And this is something that all of the big men that Bennett has had kind of struggle with early because it's such a demanding position. And then they get better as they get more experience. Right now, Jay Huff is averaging 7.6 fouls per 40 minutes. Do the math there. That means that if he plays 26 minutes, he'd be on track to foul out. So it's, again, a balancing act. You know, if you combine the strength of Jack Salt and his ability to block out. If you could maybe sprinkle in a little bit of quickness from Mamadi Diakite and then add in the offensive skills of Jay Huff and the height of Jay Huff, you have an unstoppable post player on both ends. But you can't do that. We're not, you know, magicians here. So it's just interesting to see, you know, Jay Huff, for example, great defensive rebounder by the numbers, but does that mean that he is really doing exactly what Tony Bennett's asking of him? He might miss a block out and get saved by a guard or a different player. Or last night he had a couple fouls down low as well. Whereas Jack Shaw, maybe he's a guy who has a perfect block out, but the ball just doesn't happen to come to him. Or Kyle Guy, I know, actually has a better defensive rebounding percentage than Mamadi Diakite. You would never say, yeah, I'd rather have Kyle Guy under the basket trying to get a rebound for me. But you would rather have Diakite boxing out for you and having Kyle Guy have an uncontested rebound.
Yeah, in this day and age, so many teams mirror at least somewhat what Virginia does. Virginia drops its guards back on from offensive rebounding largely. And trying to prevent fast breaks. So, if your bigs are blocking out the other bigs, your guards should get more defensive rebounds. And you know what? And this will be something maybe to explore down the line too. Virginia fans have looked at, I guess, since Anthony Gill left. He was a back to the basket post scorer, had a really dazzling post game. Now he's a 3-point shooter in Europe of all things. So, but in college at 6'7". He was a little small to be in the post, but he was really good in the post. But since he left, there's been that void in people will look at what North Carolina has done. That Carolina always seems to have one or two or three guys who can score back to the basket. That traditional basketball we all grew up with in the 70s and 80s, a lot of us grew up with in the 70s and 80s. You know, the big guy who gets the ball on the block and turns around and shoots a hook shot or a turnaround shot or drop steps. Virginia doesn't do that, but they're not alone in not doing that. The NBA doesn't do a lot of that anymore. The successful teams in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors, they spread the floor. They dribble drive, they dribble penetrate, either get to the rim or kick out to the 3-point shooters. Virginia gets a lot of points in the paint. They're not usually from the post guys. They're usually from the guards touching the paint.
Yeah, absolutely. Gil's such a perfect example of UVA doesn't really have that guy. In fact, this answer might surprise you, but I think the closest thing to Gill that's on this team is DeAndre Hunter. But DeAndre Hunter can hit threes, and he can put you in the post as well. But he's their best pure post scorer. The thing is, he's doing it because he's 6'7", and the guy guarding him is 6'4". The thing that was great about Anthony Gill is he could do it against guys of all size. But I think you're right. It's interesting to think about the UVA big men as scorers. They're never going to be a featured scorer. And that's what's so interesting about this offense and why it's hard to find fits for all of these guys because, if Jay Huff gets a block on the, or a touch on the block and scores, then you're like, wow, why don't they feed this? Why don't they run this set all the time? But then they have Jack Shaw down there and he gets the ball in close and scores and draws a foul. And, Diakite has also become a great finisher, and you wonder, why don't they run these sets all the time? Unfortunately, it's kind of where basketball has evolved and how Tony Bennett's offense is run is through their guards and then eventually into the post, but kind of as a last option there. It's just not ever going to be a featured part of the team, even though those guys have been really efficient and close. And I think that, again, goes back to the fact that Virginia shoots the ball well from three, and if they can continue to hit threes are always going to be more valuable than twos. So I think another thing, bringing it back to NC State really quickly, is that NC State was undersized, and I, in my game preview, said I think that they can make, UVA can make a more concerted effort to get the ball in down low. And you saw that at times, Diakite, there were a couple times where he just got the ball in the post and was matched up with a guy half a foot shorter than him and scored. And I was a little bit surprised to see UVA not do that a little bit more often. But then I realized that one of the things that NC State adjusted in the second half is whenever Virginia would get the ball in the post, they'd usually have a guard drop down to help. And their hands, give NC State very a lot of credit, their hands were very active. They forced, again, a lot of turnovers. And sometimes those turnovers happened when UVA got the ball in good scoring position.
Yeah, yeah, it was a slop. And Virginia, it seemed like the passing lanes were different. I was watching that game thinking, gosh, I wonder if other teams are looking at this and getting a blueprint for how to defend Virginia. And I'm taken away from that. I'm not sure. It felt to me like maybe there were other factors at play, whether it be fatigue or maybe Ty Jerome has a slight soreness in his back and he wasn't playing 100%. But clearly, NC State did disrupt some things. They disrupted the normal passing lanes. They made it tough to even get those passes on the wing to Kyle Guy cutting off a screen or Clark or Jerome cutting off a screen. They did take away some of that basic stuff. It kind of reminded me of the UMBC game last year in that respect. UMBC did a great job of taking away that first pass. It kind of gets things moving, gets that whole carnival moving. What's interesting about that is that Virginia really, in the Duke game a couple weeks ago, they early on, Duke was doing some of that, and Virginia scrapped it and just dribble penetrated on Duke and said the mover blocker is great, but we're gonna do a little bit of this and see what works, and it worked for a long stretch. And last night it seemed like there was a more concerted effort on the part of Virginia to, we're gonna run our offense, we're gonna do it, and whether it works or not, we're gonna keep doing it. And I guess they did get good shots. They shot 46%. That's respectable. When they did get through the thicket of the passing lanes being disrupted, there were quite a few good shots there. But yeah, that 16 turnovers in a low possession game last night, even with overtime, 67 possessions. That's what Virginia does to other teams. When you only have 51 times in a game to score, that's how you can shoot 46%. Your opponent shoots 34, and you win by one in overtime. That was a little bit of their own medicine being thrown back at them, I think. And definitely, I think we'll expect between now and Saturday, there will be some attention paid to just those basics, the basics of the passes and making sure they're clean and crisp.
Right, yeah. And I think Tony Bennett kind of really emphasized this. Virginia has played so many games where the starters have been out of the game with 5 minutes left because they're up by so much. And this was a really, really good learning experience for this team. You take more away from losses than you do from wins, and you take away more from close wins than you do from big wins. So Tony Bennett will be able to go back in with his guys and say, these are the areas that we missed passes. These are the areas where maybe someone could have moved or could have cut back door, something like that. I thought what was impressive by NC State, I hadn't watched a ton of them this year, but their effort defensively, they have a really deep roster. They play plenty of people, which allows them to stay fresh. Their defense, even when it's not full court, even in half court settings, is extremely aggressive. They were pressuring the ball 35 feet from the basket, which was a surprise to me. And I think one possession that kind of wrapped this game up perfectly, ironically, was actually the last possession of regulation. Ty Jerome basically ran the clock almost all the way down, got a drive past his guy. Ty Jerome's done a really good job this year of being able to be a better scorer in one-on-one situations. He got a pretty good look, and he missed. He just kind of felt like UVA had a few looks that they missed, even when they could generate some penetration against that aggressive defense. And that's what keeps games close, combined with the turnovers that they had.
Yeah, I'll put a good word in, too, for NC State. I've watched them not a lot either, but I watched them play against Carolina a few weeks ago. That was a very different game. That was up and down the court. I mean, like 5 second possessions, fast breaks for long stretches. Both teams would be going back at each other. A pinball kind of game. Now, they lost the game, but it was competitive. And then last night was the exact opposite. I mean, they ran their full court press, but they ran it more to slow Virginia down. And again, that's what Virginia does. Virginia makes you take bad shots late in the shot clock, and Virginia was in a lot of those situations. Just getting the ball off the court was a problem. They weren't able to initiate the offense until, say, 18 seconds left on the shot clock. And then, you know, then if you're denying those early passes, you know, that's when things started breaking down. And so that's impressive for NC State to be able to run with Carolina, to be able to play slow with Virginia. They lost both those games, but last night came down to the final seconds. The Carolina game was a competitive game in the final minute. Now, they've got some work to do. I mentioned that schedule for NC State coming up in the next five games. It's not going to be an easy stretch for them. And, you know, if they go 2-3 in that stretch, they're under 500 in the ACC. They've got to probably win some of those games they're supposed to win to just keep themselves on the right track as far as the NCAA tournament berth is concerned. But I think they're the kind of team, if they can get through this tough stretch, that they might be able to, be the kind of team who can surprise you in March because of the versatility they can, you know, being able to play different styles.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually thinking the exact same thing. The thing that I liked about NC State, without turning this too much into an NC State podcast, is that they have guys who can play different tempos. They have guys who can score in one-on-one scenarios. They have guys who are more of a good team offensive player, good passers. They play four guards, so all of their guys can pass. And this was, I would say, the quickest team that Virginia's played in conference so far. Obviously, you can talk about Duke. They're probably the most physically dominating team. But this was a quick team. You saw quick hands. You saw quick help side defense. And Virginia, for as slow as they like to play, sometimes that is frustrating for quick teams. But sometimes that's frustrating for the slow team. You know, we can't slow the game down to our pace. And then when we can, we're still having trouble getting those late shot clocks. Still having trouble getting into those late shot clock scoring situations because we just can't create the penetration and kickouts that we've seen Virginia be able to create. So I agree with you. It's an NC State team that's balanced. It has a lot of guys who can score, a lot of guys who will get after it defensively. You know, it's tough to say too much good about them in a game where they certainly had some chances to win, but you're right. It's, you know, guard play is what wins in March, and they have plenty of guards. If Markell Johnson isn't playing well, they can roll with Braxton Beverly or Torin Dorn. Or, you know, when you have that many skilled ball handlers who can also play great perimeter defense, Virginia only shot 10 threes, which is not a lot for them. They made four of them. But Virginia didn't really get those looks that they're accustomed to getting. And I think that that's a credit to NC State and their perimeter defense. And the good thing for UVA, if they see this team again, I'm almost sure that they will be much more well-prepared to deal with the on-ball pressure. And that's really all that you can ask for from a team, is that they make adjustments. And this will be a game that will teach UVA to play a certain style much more effectively if they do see it either in the ACC tournament or a similar team in the NCAA tournament.
So, it's Wednesday. Next game is Saturday. The Miami Hurricanes coming to town. What do you got in the works the next few days, Zach, to get us ready for that game, but also just other projects you might be working on related to UVA basketball?
Sure. So, one thing that I really like about Miami, Jim Larrañaga, great coach. He's been awesome down there. And I know that they're in the midst of a tough season, which is almost weird when you think about it. You know, they've been pretty consistently at least a challenging team to play, if not, you know, that version from about 5 years ago that was one of the top five teams of the nation. Chris Leitz is a guy who's a ton of fun to watch, and he's a quick guy too, so we'll see how UVA deals with that. I think a Kihei Clark matchup there is going to be one of the more entertaining things this weekend to watch. And then looking forward, you can see one of the things is obviously a week off before that Duke game, which is awesome. We have an entire week's worth of time to prepare for Duke. And I think I'll go back and look at what UVA did well, what UVA didn't do so well. You know, as much as I hate to talk about Zion Williamson, the guy is incredible. just an incredible physical, you know, specimen pretty much. He's a really good player, and UVA at times seemed to be able to slow him down and get him out of his comfort zone, but there were also times where they couldn't. So that'll be one thing that I'll be looking forward to. And then obviously, you know, the tough turnaround of Duke and then North Carolina, not looking too far ahead, but that's going to be a tough two-day turnaround. So lots of stuff to be looking forward to as UVA tries to manage this gauntlet.
All right. Well, for our listeners out there, welcome, Zach Peerless, to our team here. His column's coming up, and, of course, joining us here on the podcast. And, Zach, we'll have you on again soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much.